Good morning, Colorado. You're listening to the Daily Sun Up with the Colorado Sun. It's Friday, November 26th. Today, Colorado has agreed to cut CO2 emissions by 50% by 2030, and the state has been looking into something bold, carbon sequestration. Before we begin, discover so much Christmas at Gaylord Rockies. Enjoy fan-favorite holiday activities like Cirque Dreams Holidays, a Broadway-style spectacle, and the all-new original experience Mission Save Christmas, featuring Elf, where you can journey into the world of Buddy the Elf. Visit christmas@gaylordrockies.com to learn more. You can also find the link in our show notes. But before we begin, let's go back in time with some Colorado history. Today, we're going back to November 26, 1947, when Hollywood newspapers announced the firing of screenwriter Dalton Trumbo on suspicion of anti-American sentiments. Trumbo was born in Montrose and later lived in Grand Junction, where he worked for the Grand Junction Sentinel. Even after his blacklisting, he continued to write screenplays, including Roman Holiday and Spartacus. Now our feature story. To meet its climate change goals, Colorado is facing a massive challenge. The state has pledged to cut CO2 emissions by 50% by 2030. That means getting roughly 70 million tons of CO2 out of the air annually. Closing gas and coal-fired power plants will only get the state so far. So too will trading more gas-guzzling vehicles for electric ones. So Colorado has begun to look at something bold: carbon sequestration. Reporter Michael Booth recently dug into the state's planning around the concept. He spoke with fellow Sun reporter John Ingold about what he has learned.
Hey, Mike.
How's it going, John?
Good. So we're talking carbon sequestration today. That's a bit of a mouthful to say, but what is it and what does it mean for climate change here in Colorado?
Well, let's make it simpler. Let's call it taking carbon that we don't want and stuffing it underground and throwing away the key and hoping it never comes back out. So the question is that really going to be possible? Why do we need to do it? And how close are we to even starting? So we decided to kind of check in with a task force that the state had created to look at exactly those questions. And you've got brilliant minds from the School of Mines, from the State Energy Office, from all the great academic sites, NREL and other places that have studied things like this. There's a few different ways to get rid of carbon. Colorado has a goal of reducing its carbon emissions in order to help combat climate change by 26% by 2025, not that far from now, and then a whole 50% by 2030. And the simplest way to get a lot of gains is to shut off the coal-fired power plants and replace them with something cleaner, to replace all of our pollution-spewing gas-fired automobiles with electric vehicles, which they're trying to do and trying to get people to adopt, to try to get methane leaks from the oil and gas industry plugged as quickly as possible and as many places as possible, because methane contributes a huge amount to greenhouse gases in a multiplier effect. But that may not all be enough. And so people have for a long time wanted to study, is there a way to take the carbon that we've already created by burning fossil fuels and doing something with it, locking it underground or making it otherwise go away? And Colorado, like a few other Western states, where you sort of paradoxically have been able to pull a lot of fossil fuels out of the ground, those same formations that made fossil fuel possible also could be a good place to stuff that carbon. And so the question is then, how do you capture it and how do you get it underground?
So let's focus on that. What's a good example of how this might be used?
There are some industries that are going to be stubborn in terms of trying to decarbonize them. For example, the cement industry that people don't think about much, but of course we use a huge amount of it. There are at least three enormous plants in Colorado. It takes a huge amount of heat energy to bake the elements of cement until it becomes cement, and then you mix it with concrete. And the energy needed is so intense that it's really, for now, needs to be fossil fuel. And so you're going to be burning that and you're creating a lot of carbon, and there's no easy way to make that go away anytime soon. So what do you do with that? Is there a way to capture that and put it in a pipeline and take it to places where there are these formations called salt domes that are kind of just like they sound. They started about 3,000 feet underground, and the hard salt cap that used to be salt in oceans that covered Colorado and the West is a pretty much impermeable barrier once you get it underneath there, and it will not escape. And over time, under high compression, it could actually turn into rock formations and then be even more stable. So the what they're trying to figure out is it economically feasible to capture that carbon that's coming out of the smokestack of a cement kiln or from a steel plant or from the fossil fuel charged plants, electric power plants that we have and won't be able to go away completely for a decade or two, and then pipe that to a place where you can put it underground.
Is there an environmental concern to cramming all this carbon underground? Could it end up impacting drinking water, for instance?
That's certainly everybody's, if not their first question, their second or third question. Obviously, we don't want to create more environmental problems by trying to solve one of our current worst environmental problems. But the answer to that so far from the experts is that these salt and water formations, where you've got a lot of brackish water, are well below any drinking water formations, and that you'd never use that water anyway because it's got so much salt in it, and that carbon dioxide exists underground in natural form. In fact, sometimes we tried to pull it out of the ground on purpose for any number of different things. There's a lot of industrial uses of it. In fact, they've injected it into oil fields to try to push out more oil and gas and force it out the top. So putting carbon dioxide underground is not completely crazy since it already exists there. And they do think that these salt formations are a good and safe place to do it. But of course, that does beg for more study, and I'm sure they will do more of that.
And as you reported, there are also some other concerns here, especially when it comes to equity and environmental justice. So what are those issues?
Colorado has been writing economic and environmental justice into its new laws that deal with greenhouse gas emissions and fossil fuels since 2019, when some of the first bills started passing, and ever since. It's literally codified that you have to make sure that you're not making environmental problems that have historically fallen harder on low-income neighborhoods and neighborhoods of color more than other neighborhoods. And so first thing you want to do is not make that worse. So what, for example, you don't want to do if you're talking about sequestering carbon, you don't want to knock down a bunch of houses in low-income neighborhoods and in order to make a pipeline like we did for the interstate system or other highways. So you got to think very carefully about, if we need new infrastructure to make sequestration work, where should it go that would be fair? Let's make sure that other aspects of the program don't lose jobs for people who need them the most. And so those are the kinds of things they will also make sure is at the forefront of all their thinking.
And what comes next here? What's the timeline for some of these things actually happening?
Some of the private companies are moving forward on some experiments and some showcase technology. So one of the largest cement plants in Colorado, in Florence, private company, has a plan to create a way to take some of the things out of their smokestack and figure out where they could store it. So they're moving ahead with that. What the task force thinks now needs to happen is they want to delineate, okay, what do we need legislation for? What do we need some new rules for, whether it's from the Public Utilities Commission that regulates pipelines or some local government? How do we stitch together the power to do condemnation and create a place a pipeline could run? What else needs to happen? What other research needs to be done on the environmental questions? How do we channel? There's a bunch more public money coming from the recent stimulus that was passed by Congress and signed by Joe Biden. So there could be up to $12 billion to distribute among the states just for carbon sequestration issues and carbon capture. So how does Colorado go after its share of that, and what kind of public-private partnerships might bring us some more of that money? So those are the steps they will be taking before and then during the next legislative session.
Okay. Well, Michael Booth, thank you for following this story.
Have a great holiday week, everybody.
You can read more of Michael Booth's reporting on carbon sequestration and sign up for Michael and John's weekly climate and health newsletter, The Temperature, at coloradosun.com. And before we go, here are a few stories that you should know about today. In one of Colorado's most pristine places, humans started more than a quarter of all wildfires between 2000 and 2018, according to new research. The study looks at fires in the San Juan National Forest in the southwestern corner of the state. Not surprisingly, it found that human-caused fires often occurred around forest access points like trailheads or campsites. Such outdoor recreation sites have seen massive crowds, made up of both locals and out-of-state visitors during the pandemic. Advocates say the study shows the need for many people to be better educated on outdoor etiquette before venturing into the forest. The state may see some changes to the University of Colorado Board of Regents. The board has 9 members as required by the state constitution. Currently, there is 1 member for each of the state's 7 congressional districts and 2 at-large members. But Colorado next year will be getting an 8th congressional seat as a result of a growing population. State Democratic lawmakers are looking to pass a bill early next year that will eliminate one of the board's at-large seats and replace it with a seat that represents just the new 8th congressional district. It is unclear whether the bill will face any opposition. Lawmakers passed a similar measure in 2001 when the state added its 7th congressional district. An organization in Denver is giving new life to a retired ambulance. The group Joy as Resistance, a nonprofit focusing on LGBTQ+ youth, found the old ambulance on Craigslist. Now, the organization has transformed it into a mobile mental health clinic. A national survey of LGBTQ youth highlights the need for mental health services. The survey found that 42% of LGBTQ youth were seriously considering killing themselves in the previous year, and rates were higher for transgender and non-binary youth. Joy as Resistance hopes the mobile clinic will make it easier for youth to receive mental health services since it reduces barriers related to transportation. For more information on all these stories, visit our website, www.coloradosun.com. And don't forget to tune in again on Monday. Now, a quick message from our editor.
I'm Larry Rickman, editor and co-founder of the Colorado Sun. The Sun is a public benefit corporation, and we rely on the support of listeners and readers like you to produce the nonpartisan, in-depth news that Colorado needs and deserves. Please consider becoming a Sun member for just $5 a month. Learn more at coloradosun.com. Thanks.